おめ
え薄いのアホ。
プリズムカーメイクアップオカードレディ
ー。 Welcome to Shoujo and Tell, where we discuss shoujo manga and tell who's hot and who's not, talk about themes, and just generally geek out. Today, July 6, 2018, we'll be shoujo and telling about Claudine by Ryoko Ikeda. It's a slim volume that packs a big punch. I'm your host, Ashley McDonald, and I'm joined by super special guest Jocelyn Allen, who's a translator of Claudine. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you've translated Claudine, but I'm pretty sure you've translated lots of other things that you might want to mention or give another little intro of yourself.
Oh my goodness. I've translated basically all the books, I think, that have ever been published at this point. I do a lot of work. I usually do about maybe 5 books a month on average, depending
on...
Okay. Yeah. I have a lot on my plate. I'm a workaholic and I'm also possibly insane. Like, I don't know at this point.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you know, but I like what I do, so it's great. As for other series that I've been working on, maybe shoujo readers would be interested in... Well, I do Requiem of the Rose King, which is a great book. Oh, I did My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness and My Solo Exchange Diary, which are everyone's kind of talking about too.
Right, you're going to be on the Manga Machinations podcast about those.
I am. They asked me back to talk about the... Because I talked to them about My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness, and then they asked me back to talk about the sequel, My Solo Exchange Diary, so that'll be fun. I'm just talking about all the manga now.
All the manga.
That's, you know, because I love it.
Great. Do you have like a favorite shoujo series?
A favorite shoujo series? Oh, that's so hard. I'm really like, my knowledge of shoujo is lacking in a lot of ways, which is something I'm always trying to like build up. I love classic, like I love Kaze Toki no Uta, The Song of the Wind and the Trees, mm-hmm. by Keiko Takemiya, which is not available in English, unfortunately, and it is amazing. It should be, like, it was published in the 70s, and it's still like... Even today, if you tried to publish it today, you would have people saying no because it's so just crashing through all these taboos. Like, it starts off with like, hey, everyone's racist and homophobic. And hey, there's some like terrible people in the world who want to do terrible things. But you can find love, but it will be crushed.
No.
It's great. That's, I think, maybe my favorite shoujo. I'm also reading right now this shoujo series that I really like. In Japanese, though, I don't know if anyone's going to publish in English, but I hope they do because it's really good. It's called Kageki Shoujo, and it's like about... Do you know Takarazuka, the female theater troupe?
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess you're shoujoing and telling. Of course you know Takarazuka. It's kind of like this Kageki Shoujo is about this feeder school for a... It's obviously modeled after Takarazuka, but it's not called Takarazuka in the book. So it's like at the high school where these girls go to like study like music and everything to eventually become Takarazuka members. So it's kind of like this behind the scenes look at like this really fundamental like institution of theater and shoujo-ness. It's really good. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, well, it seems like shoujo is having a little resurgence heyday in America, so maybe it will be picked up. Maybe the thing from the 70s will be picked up. Is that what Claudine has spelled out for us?
Oh, wow. Wouldn't it be great if Claudine would, like, pave the way to, like, all these older shoujo series being published in English finally?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. Everybody go out and buy Claudine. I'll just say this now. It's available from Seven Seas in the U.S., and, you know, it was released recently here, like last month from when we're recording this, like a week ago, actually, from when we're recording this. But it was published initially in 1978. And, you know, it's the only Ryoko Ikeda that's like legally available in English, as far as I'm aware. I could be wrong.
You are correct, as far as I am also aware. We're still waiting for Rose of Versailles.
From Udon. What you doing, Udon? You announced that in 2015.
I translated those books, too. I know they're done.
Oh, my God. Where is it?
I know. I'm waiting, too. I'm like, I want to see it in English.
Yeah, and it's such a shame because I feel like, you know, Claudine came out, but then Noizomi Entertainment lost the license to the Rose of Versailles anime. So, like, it's like one step forward, two steps back here. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. I guess we just have to, like, hope and pray that Claudine will make everyone aware of our love for classic shoujo and bring it all back.
I know, that's what I'm hoping for. But I guess we should tell the people what Claudine is about to convince them more.
That's a good idea. So the basic story is just, with no spoilers, Claudine is born into the youngest child in this French family, like middle class family. And although he was assigned female at birth, he totally identifies as male ever since, like, from a child. Like, he tells his mom that he's a boy. And of course, it being France in, like, an unspecified time period, but a long time ago. And in any case, Ikeda was writing the series or the book in the 70s. So there wasn't that awareness of, like, gender identity that was happening then. So everyone was just like, okay, well, you're kind of boyish, but you're still a girl. And of course, this leads to tragic outcomes.
Yes, because it's like pre-2000s LGBTQ story.
Right. And especially a pre-2000s LGBTQ story in Japan, where especially in that time, like in the 70s, the only kind of like boys love and like Yuri and stuff were starting to flourish with like Shonen Ai and stuff like that. But those stories had to end tragically. Like, you couldn't have like a Yuri story that ended happily. Like, they're always ripped apart or someone dies. It's always tragic because, I mean, part of it is the drama of shoujo, right? Like, you want to have that big, oh, romance, oh no, drama. Yeah. But I mean, part of it is just like that narrative there was no other way for it to end at that time, because that was the thinking in society for the most part.
Yeah. And I wonder if there's some grafting, because isn't the story is set in France, but even earlier than the 80s, right? Is that?
Oh, yeah. Like, it's definitely, I don't know, some 100 years ago kind of time. Like, it feels a little bit old timey, but a little bit modern. Like, I could never place it.
Yeah, I just kind of, I'm like, I don't know, 1920s? I don't know.
Yeah, right? Like, it feels a little bit out of time, but still definitely not our current time.
Yeah, plus a lot of time passes in the story, like at least 10 years, right?
Like, yeah, for sure. I mean, you go from the time when I think Claudine first goes to the psychologist at the beginning of the story when he's 10.
Yes.
I think something like around 10. And then the story follows him through until he's at university. So yeah, like 10, 15 years.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's getting a master's. So that's probably closer to 15.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about the master's. You're right. Yeah.
A master's in whatever. It doesn't matter. It's fine.
Doesn't matter. Like, you never see Claudine's studying, just like hanging out.
No,
looking beautiful.
He's just so smart, and he's inherently good at everything. It's great.
It's true. The perfect shoujo man.
Yeah. So I guess we should address Claudine as he, because as somebody asked on Twitter, Shoujo Power on Twitter, you know, Anne asked, like, I noticed that her she pronouns were used for Claudine throughout the story. What went into that decision?
That is such a good question. And it was something that I really wrestled with before I started on the translation. I was just, you know, thinking about the work and like how I was going to go forward with it. And like, I, in my head, and as we've been talking, like, I'm referring to Claudine as he, because Claudine says that Claudine is a he, like Claudine identifies as a guy. So mm-hmm. I'm going to respect that because I live in the 2018.
Yeah, because we are woke people in 2018.
Ooh. But the fact is, like, something like approaching like a classic work like this is really difficult on a number of levels, because I'm working on this. Well, I was working on it in 2017. But, you know, so I'm here in the now working on a book that was written, you know, 40 years ago about a time period even further back than that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of layers of like, what do I respect? What do I emphasize? What do I keep, hold sacred, I guess? And, you know, for me, like, I think because Claudine and Ikeda, she's such a classic author that you want to respect that. Like, you want to respect the time that she came from. And I think, personally, I came to the decision that the audience for this book would understand that she wrote this 40 years ago. Like, it's not now.
Right.
So we have to like have a little give with certain concepts. And people of the time wouldn't have called Claudine a he, because there was just no, I mean, maybe there was some like small segment of the very woke somewhere, but for the most part.
Right. Like, I think like Rosemary definitely is pointedly like Claudine, you are a man to me. So that made sense to me.
Oh, totally. I love the character of Rosemary because she's so like, no, you are a man. And I can see that. Like, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
But most people are like, not like that. And the other thing is, so that was like part of my thinking was like, people of the time would not have called Claudine a he. But then the whole scene is really, the whole story is really set by the beginning scenes of like when Claudine's mother takes him to the psychologist in Paris. And the psychologist deliberately uses she pronoun for Claudine. And he is the de facto narrator of the story.
Mm.
So, and that's set right at the beginning. And he just pops in and out of the story as the narrator every so often. So it's not like all text boxes of this dude, you know, outlining Claudine's life. But he is the de facto narrator. And he specifically, and Ikeda makes it very clear that it's deliberate that he uses the word kanojo, which is she, and not kare. Like, and Ikeda puts it in quotation marks, which are like an emphasizer in Japanese.
Right. That was the feeling that I got, because the first time it is used by him on page like, what, 1, 2?
Yeah.
It is bolded. So I was like, this is very purposeful.
Yeah. Like I tried to capture that. Like I tried to use the bolding to capture the emphasis that Ikeda put on it as well. And I actually left a note for my editor to be like, hey, this is very deliberate. Please don't change this without, like, unless you have very good reason, please keep this and keep the bolding to like let the audience know that this is authorial intent here. Like it's not just a casual accident, like a thoughtless little, oh, I'll just call him she. It's deliberate. So that was my basic thinking for the she-ing throughout.
That makes sense to me. I feel like I picked up on that while reading. So good job. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm glad it's like being picked up on. I haven't gotten a lot of pushback on Twitter. So I think like people who are reading it are getting that. Like, and you know, like I said, like I respect the audience for this book enough to know and feel that they will understand the intent of Ikeda and like the time period that the book was written in as well.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting like push pull here of like people being like, yes, classic shoujo being licensed and LGBTQ representation, but also like outdated LGBTQ representation.
Right. It's hard to find that balance. Like when I work on stuff, like I'm working on this series, That Sky Blue Feeling, or no, That Blue Sky Feeling, which is about these two high school dudes, like one of whom is out and, you know, gay. And the other one, he's sort of like discovering his feelings, like, who am I? Like, what is my, you know, sexuality and gender identity and all that. Mm. So it's very exploratory. But it's now, like it's written now and it's happening, like the time period is now. So it's really easy to just like take modern, you know, North American LGBTQ ideas and use them in the story without problem. But with something like a classic shoujo or a classic LGBTQ work, how do you, you can't take that modern sensibility and like paste it onto the past. Like it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, I respect it because I like seeing where, you know, shoujo like tropes came from and all those things. And like, I'm like, I must understand that this is 40 years ago. Like,
yeah, exactly. And I like it for that reason too. Like, I like to see the growth of the genre and like where the roots, especially with, you know, the 49ers, that group of shoujo artists who really revolutionized the whole genre, like to see a work from Ikeda, one of the 49ers, and see that, like where that starting point of shoujo is, to me is so interesting. But I know that there are readers who just will find like something to be offended by in it. Like, what? It's not modern. Like, we don't think like that now. Like, well, yeah. No, we don't. That's the point.
We're all thankful we don't think like that anymore.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm glad to see like work like this coming out, and I really hope that Claudine is the siren for more.
Yeah. Do we have like a favorite thing to hook people? I mean, I'm not going to begrudge anybody who doesn't want to read it because it's real tragic. Like,
oh yeah, it's super tragic. Like,
warning, it is super tragic. But I mean, there's a lot to like in it, right? Like, what's your favorite thing?
There's so much to really enjoy in this. But I think I really like the character of Rosemary a lot. If only because she's like, I mean, she's kind of like, because she loves Claudine and she wants to be with Claudine, and Claudine constantly rejects her. But because she loves Claudine, she's so terrible in so many ways.
It's true.
Like, she does mean things because she wants Claudine to love her. And she feels like if she destroys these, like, happinesses that Claudine finds, like, Claudine falls for another woman. And so Rosemary ends up, like, outing, you know, a certain situation. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but, like, yeah. Rosemary sort of tattles and ruins that for Claudine. And she kind of does that throughout the book. Like, she just sort of is like this walking cloud of doom.
Definitely.
A really sincere walking cloud of doom. Like, her motivation is actually genuine. And I think it's so relatable. Like, how, like, this is something I think we've all done, like, just been really bad because we were trying so hard to be good. Like,
yeah, I mean, part of me was always confused why Claudine was so, like, mean to her all the time. I was like, I understand the setup situation is like, Claudine's like, well, you know, you're just being kind of, you're just exploiting me basically to your friends and all these things. And I was like, okay, but Claudine, Rosemary is the one person who truly thinks of you as a man besides like yourself, basically. I don't know. It was always weird to me.
No, it's totally true. I think Claudine pushes back against Rosemary. I mean, obviously, like, there's the setup that has to be the story. But I think because there's a part of Claudine that wants more, like, Rosemary sees Claudine, like, says that she sees Claudine as a man. And Claudine, I think, can't accept, in a way, like, can't accept being seen as a man in a woman's body. And that's kind of where Rosemary is coming from. Like, even if Rosemary says she sees Claudine as a man, she's known Claudine since Claudine was a child. And she knows that Claudine's body is female. Like,
I see.
I feel like there's some kind of something like that inside of Claudine that pushes back against Rosemary.
I see. Because he wants to meet somebody who just, like, automatically sees him as a man and just only knows him as that.
Yeah, kind of. Like it's having that past tied to him, I think maybe is a bit of a burden in a way. And so he's trying to, like, pull away from that. And you see that when he leaves his town, like, and goes off to university, like, he wants to cut free from a past that doesn't recognize him and doesn't accept him. But he never quite managed that.
Yeah, still, well, because Rosemary, you know, comes again.
She is the cloud of doom.
Yeah.
I don't know. What is a particular part that you really enjoyed?
I mean, I really like, I think, the setup of the story. Like, I kind of like the old-timey, fable-y aspect of, like, a weird old psychiatrist man, like, telling this sad, tragic story. Like, I'm all about my tragic stories. I'm all for equal opportunity tragedy, you know? Like, tragedy, it strikes us all.
Exactly, yeah. We all need a good cathartic cry from time to time.
Right, like, I am all about cathartic crying. Some of my favorite shows, Grey's Anatomy, like, cry all the time. Constant crying. But yeah, so I mean, it's fun to see the old art that I don't normally get to see from my, you know, starting with shoujo in, like, the 90s or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. It's not something you get to see a lot of. And I love, there's the psychologist right at the beginning. He's depicted with glasses on. There's this one frame where he just looks like an alien bug person.
Yes. Like,
what is that?
I every time I look at that frame, I'm just like, what is happening here? Why didn't you draw the thing in between his glasses so that he doesn't look like a weirdo? Like, what's going on?
He really looks like he's come from another planet to take over Earth.
Yes. I think I also like seeing the evolution of, like, there's lots of frames in which Claudine and other people's eyes, they're not drawn with, like, pupils. Like, they're drawn with, like, this exasperated face that I think means something different here than what it does when you see that modern manifestation of it in more modern manga. I think it's more, like, jokey and funny in modern manga, whereas here I thought it was, like, a very serious, like, I desperately do not like what you just said.
Yeah, sort of deal. I think, like, the expressiveness, yeah, it totally has a different kind of feel to it for sure.
Yeah, so those were my two things that I really liked. But okay, so I feel like we definitely have spoiled. It's very hard not to spoil things in a thing that's like 100 pages.
Well, and I feel like I mean, it's kind of spoiled from the get-go. Like, it's not a story that really relies on the plot. Like,
it's true. Like, in the framing of it, you are told, sort of, that it's sad. Like, the first thing that you're told is, like, super pathetic fallacy. It's like, it's a rainy, cold day. And
it's true.
Claudine has come into my office, and, like, this can't end well.
Well, and then, like, she's a boy, and, you know, I don't know what to do with my daughter who thinks she's a boy. Like, it's not going to end well. Like,
just can't expect it to.
Yeah, so I feel like anyone picking it up is sort of going to be like, and I think the point of the story is not like, oh, hit these plot points, like this thing happened, then this thing happened. It's more about that, like Claudine's inner, her psyche, like how she's going through this world and like the people around her and the relationships between the people. Like, I mean, that's so often what shoujo's about anyways, like that, those relationships. So it doesn't, I mean, you can spoil it all you want. You're just going to be not surprised when the terrible thing happens, but you'll still feel terrible and cry.
Yes. But so now we definitely are going to spoil lots of things. We are going to do a deep dive here. So if you, you know, haven't read Claudine, but you know, you are also about cathartic cries, then you should pause and go read Claudine.
Take a moment. We'll be here when you come back.
Yes. And then we will proceed to spoil all of Claudine's loves and tragic ending now.
Let's spoil.
Spoil. Okay, so Claudine, first I just wanted to talk about Claudine's, because it is definitely like a progression of love story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, normally shoujo manga has the problem of like, this is the first person I fell in love with and we're going to be in love forever now. And I'm like, all right, yeah. calm down. and I think Claudine has those feelings, but actually has three lovers because those things end. And I'm like, okay, that's fair.
Yeah, and they all end in kind of terrible ways.
Super terrible ways.
Yeah.
But they definitely represent a, you know, progression of Claudine's experience with love and finding himself sort of deal. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very well, like Ikeda crafts it really well to lead us through like Claudine's growth through his lovers, basically.
Yeah. So the first one is Mara.
She's so cute. She looks like there's this cat girl manga that came out maybe around the same time, and Mara looks just like the main character. And every time I see her, I'm like, you need some kitty ears.
Yeah, you're like, you're a cat. Cool. Mara definitely is very cute, very childlike. But we are told that she has gotten her period, so she is a woman.
Yes, that was a weird line to translate. I was like, can I just write I menstruate?
Oh, yeah. Were there other like weird lines like that? There was only one point where I was like, I don't feel like I follow the logic. And it was very early on the psychologist was asking Claudine about like, do you love your father? And Claudine's like, yeah. And then he's like, do you love your mother? And he's like, yeah. And then he's like, can we be friends? And I was like, what's the connection here? Like,
yeah, that was weird. Yeah, that it doesn't really seem to flow. But I think the psychiatrist's intent there was to establish like kind of like a path of treatment per se, like how am I going to approach this boy Claudine, and then was like, oh, I don't think my traditional psychotherapy stuff is going to work on you, so how about we be buddies, like to try and build like a relationship of trust. But it was
right.
I think a lot of it was just omitted, and it's like, okay, sure.
Yeah, I was like, friends. This doesn't connect to me, but that's fine, I'm just gonna go with it.
That's fair. It's a part that you just kind of like, sure. Keep moving. But Mara, love.
She's very cute and innocent. And I think she is purposefully like the innocent love in the beginning. It starts with Claudine being very like kind of mean to her because Claudine, you know, like was supposed to go pick up Mara and then just is like, I'm gonna go ride some horses with my dad instead or something. Like,
it's like a great scene to indicate like how much Claudine idolizes his father. Like, because I mean, you see that, and like when he's talking to the psychiatrist, he says that too, like, I adore my father. But this is a scene where, like, Claudine is supposed to do a thing that his mother has asked him to do, and he just blows it off to go hang out with his dad because his dad is way cooler.
Yeah, way and cooler.
it's, I think it's like, that's the thing that Ikeda is trying to establish there, is like how much Claudine idolizes his father, because it plays a huge role later on, right? Like, his father utterly betrays him, basically.
Definitely.
That's the next love. We're not that's done. That's the next love. We're not.
But, like, that's a good point, is that it shows how much he idolizes his father. And I guess, you know, in learning that he's like, that Claudine then loves Mara, that's kind of him, you know, coming into his own. He's like, I did do something wrong here by not going to pick up Mara, because then Mara gets lost, and that's no good. Everybody worries about Mara. And then there's a point where Rosemary also comes in and is like, hey, Mara, no, the post office is in the exact opposite direction of where it actually is. Oh, yeah,
Rosemary's so mean.
So mean. And then Mara loses all the money that she's supposed to be a maid for Claudine's family, and then she loses all her first wages. Because Rosemary has deceived her about where the post office is, and then she kind of like falls off a cliff or something and gets frostbite. It kind of sucks. It sucks a lot.
It's a bad scene. Yeah. And she's like, I mean, Mara's also like the perfect innocent. Like, she comes from this family that, like, her mom, I think, was friends with Claudine's mom or something. I can't remember their exact relationship. But their family falls on hard times, and they need Mara to go out to work. And so Claudine's mother, like, says, she can come be a maid with us. So Mara is just like this scrappy, like, I love my family so much. I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to, like, be so friendly and nice. But it all turns out so awfully for her. And she's kind of punished for nothing that was her fault. Like, and then her dad dies. And then that's when Claudine, like, makes his move, which is, like, maybe not the best
time. Not the best time, Claudine. But okay.
My dad died. Let me kiss you.
Let me kiss you. That'll make the pain go away. No.
Unsurprisingly, it does not make the pain go away. And in fact, it ends up with more pain, because Claudine announces his intention to marry Mara, and Mara is quickly shipped off back to her family in the countryside.
Yes. And what I think is, I guess we just don't know how Mara felt about that relationship, really, because it's like Claudine kisses her, and then, like, his mom immediately comes and is like, oh my God, no. And then the next panel is like,
we never see Mara again, right? Like, she's just gone.
No, she's just gone. She's just, you know, she was getting money to, like, help her dad. So I guess it's kind of like, well, her dad's dead. They don't need, it's fine. They're fine now.
I feel like, the rest of Mara's story has always bothered me. Like, and I mean, it's shoujo manga. They're not really thinking about class issues and stuff, but I was thinking about class issues.
I think it's begging you to ask about class issues, right? Like, it's inherently kind of about that.
Yeah, well, that relationship in particular, like, I mean, and, you know, like, Claudine's family is clearly wealthy, and they just sort of have a cavalier attitude towards a lot of people that I was really uncomfortable with. Not the least of whom was, of course, Mara, who, now that her dad is dead, doesn't her family need that money more than ever? There's no one to make, no breadwinner in the family anymore.
I don't know.
But because, like, their, you know, son might fall in love, you know, their son, who they perceive as their daughter, might fall in love with a girl, which would be, like, a scandal. They just send that girl away without ever, like, considering, hey, maybe we're doing her family something, like, putting them in a really terrible situation now.
Yeah, and that kind of goes against, like, because Claudine is kind of always aspires to be some sort of knight. And so he's not behaving like, I don't know, it's just like every time he tries to behave as a knight, it goes very badly, because that's the opposite of what you want to happen as a knight, to be like, oh, right? My girl got shipped away to the castle that I can never find her from.
Wah, wah.
Fail.
Doesn't seem like it's really the greatest, but Claudian's still learning. At this stage in life, he's only like 12 or something.
Yeah, I was like, are they the same age? Because, you know, Mara's real small, so it was confusing to me.
Well, and Mara declares her, like, womanhood, too, so she has to be... But I don't know, because we don't know the time period, right? So, like, at what age would a family send their daughter away to be a maid in someone else's family? Like, I don't really know how that situation would work.
I guess she was also 12. Like, I don't know.
It was not an age inappropriate romance in any case.
Right. But yeah, so for Claudine, I think that's just like an awakening of like where he still has to grow up, perhaps distancing himself from his father, you know, a little bit, coming into his own there.
Oh, for sure.
That relationship was not mutual, so I feel okay that it was squashed.
Yeah, like, I don't know. We never get to see how Mara feels, but I don't think it would go well. Like, because for one thing, she's the maid. Like, she has no agency. She can't make a choice.
Yeah.
Like, there's some issues there. So maybe it's good that she got sent away so we didn't have to watch some, like, consent boundaries happen.
I also think that Mara, you know, in the beginning, she was like, oh, I mistook you for a dude. But then she's like, oh, I realize that now that you're a girl. And I don't think that she ever stops thinking of Claudine as female. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And the other thing about Mara and that relationship, I think it's the first time that Claudine, like, up to that point, Claudine has identified as a boy and has said, like, in past lives, he was a boy or a man. But I think with Mara, that's the first time Claudine, like, feels the stirrings of manhood, as it were. Like, not only
yes,
not only do I identify as a boy, but I'm gonna grow up and be a man. Like, I think it's a signifier of that, the future that awaits.
That's fair. So I think we can move on to Claudine's second love that goes, I think this might be the really troubling one.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in this relationship.
So it's with Cecilia, and now this is that is her name, right? Cecilia's,
yeah,
how we pronounce it.
I think so. I mean, yeah, the Japanese, she uses like French sounding names, but like a lot of the times the pronunciation is kind of Englishy.
I see. That makes sense. There's a lot of languages going on here.
Right, and they didn't have the internet back then, so she couldn't, like, double-check if it's Cecily or...
Right, she would have had to, like, go to a library and, like, sit there and meticulously look stuff up.
I mean, I know she did a lot of research, like, especially for, like, the backgrounds and scenery and stuff like that, but I think there's also a tendency in Japan to sort of Japanese things. Like, even if you know... that it's not quite the, like, it's not actually like a very French name or whatever, you'll just kind of Japanese it because it's easier for Japanese readers. Because all these works are not intended for like translation. They're just intended for the Japanese audience, which means you're going to like fudge things so that the Japanese audience can really engage with it.
Right. That's what I always find fascinating is that, like, yeah, I'm like, Japan is just writing these for Japan and doesn't care about us.
They don't. I mean, sorry.
Sorry. It's okay. I'm not offended. It's fine. But yeah, so Cecilia is like, this is an age gap romance now, right? We're in a little age gappy area.
Like, she has to be at least 10 years older than him.
Right, because she is the librarian at high school.
At his high school, yeah.
Yeah, not his university, at his high school.
Which is...
That's tricky. So this is like a secret age romance gap love thing going on. And I'm like, okay. And I think this is the point where Claudine gets scarred and Rosemary gets scarred, both literally... Yeah. Figuratively, because it turns out that Cecilia is also sleeping with Claudine's dad.
And Cecilia's brother, who is Rosemary's tutor, is sleeping with Claudine's dad.
Yeah, so everybody's sleeping with Claudine's dad.
And Claudine didn't know any of this until... Well, actually, Claudine walked in on... what's his name? The tutor.
I don't remember his first name. I just, Laquise is like their last name, right?
Oh, okay. So I'm just going to call him the tutor.
Yeah, that's fine.
So the tutor, like, there's a thing where they mention where Claudine walked in on dad and tutor when he was like 8 years old.
Right. And that's kind of what, like, that seems to be the point in which, because it's mentioned that, like, at the age of 8, Claudine became really adamant about being a boy. And so I'm like, is that the inciting incident? Oh, no.
Wow. Yeah. There's like, that's never really explored in any depth, which is probably for the better because it could go very wrong.
Yeah.
But it's just so Claudine has always had this little kernel of knowledge that his dad is like banging the tutor. And then Rosemary is like, it's always Rosemary like who instigates all the terrible things.
Always getting everybody in trouble.
Rosemary is out riding in the woods and she's like, I'll take a break or something like that. And she goes to this cabin, like some kind of gate groundskeeper's hut or something like that, and discovers dad and librarian Cecilia in the act.
People need to find more private places for these tries.
Honestly, I mean, a gateskeeper's hut in the middle of like the forest seems pretty private, to be honest.
What's Rosemary doing then? Question this girl.
Right? She's just getting in the way. Like it's her mission in this book to be in the way. So then of course she runs back and like tells Claudine because, and again, this is the part of Rosemary where I just so understand her because she immediately regrets it because she didn't think Claudine would be so upset, which of course Claudine is going to be that upset.
Right. I was like, oh, I guess maybe she expected him to be like just curious at first, but I'm like, you're talking about his lover who he's like in love with, sleeping with somebody else who you didn't let on was his dad, but like... That's just going to make it worse.
Right. It's so awful. And like, but Rosemary tells him, I think her expectation is that Claudine will be like, oh my goodness, thank you for opening my eyes the truth. I love you, Rosemary. I honestly think that was her intention.
That makes sense from Rosemary logic. Sure.
Right. So that's why she's such an appealing character to me. She does these awful things, but all she wants is for Claudine to love her. And she just can't figure out a good way to do that.
Yeah. I'm like, what is a good way to do that? I guess definitely don't just like keep sabotaging Claudine's relationships. Just be like that person that Claudine comes to with like, I'm so sad right now, and then slowly fall in love. You know, that's a story.
that's a friend zone story, though. It'll never happen. Yeah. So poor Cecilia.
Yeah. But then so the tutor brother goes and kills them both.
Yeah.
In a fire.
To be honest, I did not see that coming. Like, I did not see a crazed tutor going out to the cabin and setting it aflame and then laughing and listening to them screaming as they burn to death. Like, whoa, that's gruesome.
It definitely took a dark turn. I think when I read it too, I was like, whoa, okay.
That's super dark. When he comes out of the forest on the horse and is like, ha ha ha, they're dead. Like, what kind of supervillain thing just happened here?
And do we ever know what happened to him? Like, was there any repercussion to him?
He just goes away. No, everyone who's done with Claudine's story just falls to the wayside.
I like to think that he just, like, got away with that. Like, Claudine, like, never reported it. It's just like, he's fine.
Yeah, oh, and, like, God. Rosemary never said anything either. Because, I mean, obviously Rosemary knows because she was a victim of the terrible fire herself.
Right, because she, like, runs in to be like, oh, no, like, trying to stop Claudine. And then it's like, ah! Now we're in a fire. Yeah, so her face gets burned.
Yeah, she's permanently scarred from that.
Yeah. That's definitely, like, you can't even say it's the darkest turn because, like, the end is super dark, too. But, like, that's pretty up there.
It's, I feel like it's like the non-psychologically darkest turn.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of like Claudine's mentality and stuff, like this is the part where this is terrible. It's a tragedy, but like Claudine's mind is still kind of upbeat. Like Claudine will love again, basically.
Yeah. Claudine has a chance to love again is basically what happens.
Yeah. But you know, everyone else like just dies.
Oh my gosh.
And because of this, Claudine, like, this is like, I'm done with this town. And so his brother comes back from university to, like, take over the family business house. I can't remember what they do. And then Claudine, like, runs away and, like, goes to Paris to university to become the most popular person on campus. And even the men's club will let this girl in because she's special, they say.
Also, he gets real hot. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those wardrobe choices, I'm like, oh, yes, Claudine.
Bring it. Yeah, there's some stylish. This is a section that gets really stylish because, like, Claudine is basically a grown-up at this point, whereas before he was still a child, so we didn't get to see, like, him rocking the hot fashion.
Yeah. No, no. Then it's, like, hot fashion time. And I'm like, yes.
This is also the part that leads to that, when does this take place exactly part of my brain? Because, like, these fashions are pretty 70s.
Oh, that is true.
Like, those shoes and that, and, like, Claudine, I was always wearing that like trench coat or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not a 1920s or 1900s France look. That's like 1970s Japan. For 1970s Japan.
It's fine. As long as it looks good.
I always enjoy that aspect. Like a lot of classic shoujo does that. What is that ballet one? I can't remember the name of it. But there's this great like ballet manga and it's supposed to be like they go to Russia and like the main character studies at this Russian dance school and stuff like that, but they always look like it's Japan in the 70s.
Like just pretend it's like how in movies they're like, this is some place that's totally not LA, and you're like, it's totally LA. Like,
yeah, exactly. And it's kind of fun. Like you're like, I know it's totally LA, that's fine. And you can enjoy it for what it is. Like
yeah.
So yeah, we're still in the 70s, but somewhere in the early 1900s in France.
Yeah, totally. We're rocking the Japan 70s style. So this is the one that I'm like, I definitely don't know how to pronounce her name.
Oh, Siren.
Siren. Okay. Siren. That's definitely not how I would have said it.
Yeah, I don't know how. Does it have an accent in the printed version?
It does.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So it should. I don't have the book to hand and I couldn't remember. Yeah, it's Siren. That accent makes the E go eh.
I see.
Quick French lessons.
I definitely don't know French.
That's totally fine. You don't need to say Siren to have any good experience with Siren in the book. Yeah.
So Siren is like finally some sort of healthy relationship for Claudine. Because
yeah.
This is mutual, right? They're like the same age. It's mutual. I'm like, great.
Yeah, totally. Siren falls for Claudine and they're like happy. They move in together. And of course, it's like her family thinks that Claudine is a woman and like Claudine comes from such a good family that they're delighted that Claudine would take an interest in their precious little Siren. And hopefully like knowing someone from such a good family will raise Siren's social standing. And they're just like, yay, she has a great roommate. But yeah. It's like, no, she has a great lover.
Yeah. And they're like, no, they're totally getting it on. Like, they're having so much fun.
They're happy. Like, they're totally happy. It's like the most upbeat part of the book is when Siren and Claudine fall for each other.
Yes. And they look cute together. They're so good.
Oh, they're adorable together. Like when they're walking arm in arm and Siren has that. And Siren has shown up a few times before this. Like, so like, I think Ikeda's trying to like position Siren as like Claudine's destined match, you know, because like when they were, I assume, maybe I'm just projecting my own like thinking, but I assume when the first time Claudine goes to the psychiatrist and he grabs the umbrella of like a little girl.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then again, later on, when Claudine is like pining for Cecilia, I think he walks by like a dance studio.
Yes, that time it was clear, but the umbrella.
Yeah. I think that's Siren. I've always read it as that was Siren. So like in each of these periods of like Claudine's other love, like with Mara and with Cecilia, you always see Siren is like in the wings, so to speak, waiting like for her, like because she's the one that will truly accept Claudine and will truly love Claudine. And she does. Like, that's totally what happens. It's great. They're very happy until they're not. Dun,
until
dun,
dun. Until Siren decides that she's in love with Claudine's brother for some reason.
No, but it's so, like, I totally get why she decides this. Like, for one thing, especially at that age, like you said before about that shoujo trope about, like, you're the first person I've ever loved. We're going to be together forever. Like,
yeah.
No, you're not. Like, that's not how it works. Usually, like, most people do not love the same person for the rest of their life. And especially at this age, like, you know, at university, like, maybe Claudine and Siren, they were going to break up at some point. Like, it was going to fizzle out or whatever. Maybe it wouldn't have. Like, you don't know. But I don't know if Siren's feelings actually changed before that or... Like, I feel like there's those two possibilities. Like, she could have sort of been, like, fading on Claudine already. And then Claudine's brother Andrew is like, hey, I like you. Let's go out. And she's like, oh, an interesting offer.
Yeah.
Or it could have been, and maybe this is the more likely, is it could be that Siren realizes that her position with Claudine is, in the end, it's untenable. Like, they can't go on like that. Because they live in a society that's not going to accept them. Because for all intents and purposes, like Claudine, the world sees Claudine as a woman and two women cannot live together like as partners. That's not, it wasn't a time when that was okay.
Yeah.
So Siren is sort of, I feel like there's a part of her where she's like, I'm not strong enough to live, to push back against those societal conventions.
Mm.
So when Andrew is like, hey, she's like, this is a way for me to live a normal, quote unquote, life.
Yeah.
And
I definitely felt that in that, you know, assuming since it has been seeded that, you know, she was watching Claudine from afar for all his life or whatever, I was like, okay, so maybe she's never dated a dude before and is like, oh, the interesting offer to be normal, like, or whatever is perceived as normal in the 70s. I'm not going to normalize like that, but like.
Yeah, for sure. Like, that's why I'm like, quote unquote, like, I don't want to. But I mean, there is like a general what is acceptable to the larger society of the time and, you know, of that time, whether it's 1970s Japan or 1900s France, I think they both have the same general idea of like, yeah, nope to same sex coupling. Thanks, bye.
Yes, thanks, bye. Yeah, I just, again, it's like, I wish we had gotten like a little more into what made Siren like interested in Andrew in particular, maybe, or like just a little bit more of that turning point of like, oh, this thing with Claudine, like we're having fun in college, but like, oh.
Yeah, I'm like, I definitely would have liked to have seen more of Siren's like mental state and like why she walked that path, but we never get to see any inside anyone's head but Claudine's. Like, that's the way the story is structured. We never see what Mara felt. We never see what Cecilia felt, except for when Cecilia, like when they say it out loud and you know, you get, so it's like that whole you're a girl thing. Oh, burn, that's so painful. Like, so you see like Cecilia's mindset through those words, and similarly you see, you know, what some of what Siren is feeling through how she handles Claudine after she starts seeing his brother. But yeah, I think Ikeda's focus with the book is always Claudine and like what Claudine is going through. So she doesn't consider it essential to tell us what Siren is doing. Why?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And then of course, Rosemary doesn't really mess this. Well, a little bit. Okay, I guess.
She kind of tries. She shows up.
Rosemary is here and then is like, hey, she really wasn't trying to sabotage it this time though, right? Like,
but she never really is trying to sabotage it so much as she's trying to make Claudine see her. Right. Like, even though it always ends up sabotaging. Yeah.
But this time I think it was like there was a pure innocence to the statement that she made, which is just that, like, oh, your brother Andrew's been here. So, like, he must be staying with you, right? And Claudine's like, what now?
Oh, but I feel like Rosemary was like, oh, hey, I hear your brother's in town.
Oh, that's
like,
the tone you read that in?
I feel like there was a bit of a, maybe I know something you don't know that you should know kind of attitude, because that's Rosemary. Like, she always has that.
I definitely, I guess I was giving her more credit after having her face be burned. And, like, she does, so in this progression of Claudine being with Serene, she's like, you know, Rosemary has come and been like, oh, hey, what's up? I'm moving on into the past too, which I guess you can read as facetious because she has shown up into the same town that Claudine is in. Like,
I mean, it's a big town to be sure. Like, it's Paris, so it's sort of like, you know, moving to Tokyo.
Right, but we can be like a little skeptical, I guess.
Yeah, we're still raising our eyebrows. Oh, sure, yeah.
But so, like, she at least says that she's like, whatever, you know, like, my face is scarred. There's nowhere left for me, like, whatever. Seemingly, she's given up on Claudine. So I definitely was, like, giving her the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah, I never give her the benefit of the doubt.
Fair enough. That's fair.
But, I mean, she comes... You have to assume that the choice of, like, shop location was a bit deliberate, like, so that she would run into Claudine, like, oh, I didn't know you lived in this neighborhood, Claudine. Of course she did. She's Rosemary. She totally knew that.
Like, she's like, hey, Claudine, you know, you ended up scarring my face. Maybe you can be the one who loves me. Like,
yeah. She never stops.
Never stops.
She loves Claudine. She's the only one who can see Claudine's true self, she believes. And she tries to, like, save Claudine from the people that she thinks are bad for Claudine, even though she is bad for Claudine.
Everybody's, yeah, she's the one who, like, makes those people bad for Claudine, sort of. I don't know.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, in this situation, all she sort of does is hurry the inevitable, I guess, because like Sirene is already going out with Andrew. It's just a matter of, like, Claudine finding out at this point.
Right. So then Claudine finds out and is like, hey, now you have to choose between me and my brother. And Sirene does not choose Claudine.
No, she runs straight into the arms of manly head of the family, Andrew.
Andrew.
And she's wide lapelled suits. Where are the suit jackets?
Also, his name is Andrew. Come on. Like, this is so boring.
I know. And it's also, like, that's what I was saying about the, you know, Japanese-ing the Frenchness. Andrew is not a French name.
Andrew's not like, French.
It would be André, but, like, that would be hard for Japanese people. I don't know. Like, I honestly can't. I'm like, why Andrew? That's not even close to being... And she would know. She did write The Rose of Versailles.
Yeah.
In which there is an André. Like,
she's like, well, I can't have two Andres. So,
like, yes, this one will be Andrew. Yeah. Like, look at her name then.
There are no other French names.
No, I mean, like, Robert. Like, just call him Robert. There, done.
It's fine. Andrew. So Andrew gets the girl and Claudine ends his life. Oh, dark.
Dun, dun, dun. It is very dark. Claudine reaches out a little bit to the psychiatrist at the end before ending his life.
And the psychiatrist also does not handle that correctly, I guess.
No, I don't think the psychiatrist really knew, like, why Claudine was calling.
That's fair. Like, Claudine did not give enough context.
Yeah, like, Claudine calls out of the blue. Like, they haven't, I mean, the last time we saw the doctor was after the whole Cecilia thing, right? Or before that.
Yeah.
Anyways, we haven't seen the doctor in a long time. And then suddenly Claudine is calling the doctor and being like, hey, so did you learn anything from me?
Yeah, he's like, was I interesting to you in the end? And then he's like, why are you calling me out of the blue? We were buddies. And basically, and I thought of you as an imperfect man. And the word imperfect is what really seems to set Claudine off.
I think because I think Claudine like grabs onto that word like, oh, this is how to explain it. Like, I've never been able to explain myself. Because Claudine's always known, I'm a guy, but has never had any vocabulary to say that. And imperfect is a not good word. No. But it is the Japanese word. Like, I think it was Fukanzen or something, like incomplete or imperfect. Like, you started out on the path to becoming a man, but then like the road took a weird V off to one side or something. Like, and I think Claudine, like, that word resonates with Claudine because finally he has a word to hold on to. And also maybe that echoes with how he feels about himself. Like, if only I had the dude body, like the perfect body, which to Claudine, the body that he has is like the wrong body.
Right.
So, I mean, in that sense, like, I think that imperfection, that idea kind of like resonates with him because if he had a perfect body, he would have kept the girl.
Right. And I think he's like, I can never be perfect.
Well, that's just it. And at that time period, probably not. Like, I mean, it's not like he can have gender affirmation surgery or something like that.
Like, yeah, he can't get diagnosed with gender, whatever, the dysphoria, like, and then go get an operation as we can now.
I don't think in the 70s in Japan, the words for gender dysphoria or gender identity disorder even existed.
Not so surprising.
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't even know in English what we were like, what kind of vocabulary we had, you know, in the late 70s to refer to like transgender people. So I think like that imperfect, I think, was a way to like create some kind of vocabulary to discuss for, you know, the idea of Claudine's situation. And when Claudine hears that word, I think it really like really resonates with him. Like, and he realizes, well, I can't. Like, I'm imperfect. That's the problem. That's it. Of course. No wonder I'm so unhappy. No wonder every love I have turns out so tragically. So, yeah, I mean, the doctor probably didn't help.
And then he starts off pretty good. He's like, yeah, I mean, clearly you're a man. Then he's like, you're imperfect. Then I think it goes into him describing Claudine as like having manly tendencies, which is like, goes back to implying that he's not really a man. So I'm like,
yeah, I feel like, yeah, the doctor, and to be fair, like, he probably never had a case like that before. Like, the fact that he was trying to affirm Claudine at all was probably commendable for the time.
I know. I think he was honestly trying really. I thought he was like pretty good for my assumptions of the time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think he was really trying. Like, and he genuinely felt terrible that he couldn't do. He couldn't give Claudine what Claudine needed.
Yeah, and I actually, that's part of like the framing story that we get here is like, overall, it's not, as you said before, it's not super heavy throughout. It's not like everything is a narration except for dialogue from this guy. Like,
right.
You know, but when it does come up, it just, I think it also goes into my point that I have listed in stock about like inheritance that's kind of troubling. But like, you know, it feels like some sort of, it's trying to be some sort of warning, like some sort of fable thing in the way that it's like, ah, here's a tale that I'm going to tell you, like a tragic love where that I like couldn't prevent the tragedy of sort of deal.
Yeah, I mean, I totally hear that. Like, there is a kind of fable, a sense of the story becoming like a story for the ages with the framing of the doctor narrating. And I guess like it could be taken as like a cautionary tale. Like, don't you go thinking you're a boy, ladies.
Yeah, like, don't you?
But I feel like it was more, I actually feel like it was a more hopeful tale than that. Like, even though it ends in tragedy, because the doctor like admires Claudine, like even with everything that Claudine was fighting against in a world that didn't see him for who he really was, Claudine continued to try to be that person that he truly was and love and live. And the doctor really admired that.
Hmm, that's true. Maybe it's more of like a warning of how hard it would be.
Yeah, and that's like not an unfair warning, you know, like if you are outside, you know, heteronormative standards, you are going to have a harder time in the general larger world. Like even now, that's still the case. So, I mean, I hope we don't all have our dads like sleep with our would be lovers and get found by her spiteful brother, but like
yeah. I mean, that's just so, like, I guess Claudine's dad is, like, bi then, which is also, like, okay, cool. But, like...
Yeah, like, I like that. I like the how that was set up and never, like, it was never emphasized. It was just like, yep, the dad's sleeping with everyone. Like,
right, that's what I think is so interesting about some stories. Like, even... just generally with stories, it's like sometimes you have this thing that's like really problematic and that's what it's exploring. And then other things you're just like, but you just like let this progressive thing be in here and just like didn't have to comment on it. You're like, that's just there. You just accept that as a story beat. Like, cool.
Yeah, I really like the dad for that reason. He's just like, yep, I'm the other queer person in this story. Could be more, but we're not talking about anyone else right now.
Right. But that's part of what makes it like somewhat troubling to me, because okay, there is the spread that's like on page, oh, there are page numbers. Okay, cool. So page I don't know, like 10 or so. There's a spread.
Uh-huh.
Where it is Claudine and his dad on horses. They're hunting.
Uh-huh.
And it's all just trees. I'm sure you're intimately familiar with the one I'm talking about. I know
all of these scenes so well.
Yeah. There are 5 word bubbles, and it is just talking about, so I guess I could just read them, but, you know, talking about it, Claudine's mom says she gave him 3 sons, but her blood ran thick in each of them. Aside from kindness, there was nothing particularly distinctive to be found in any of them. Thus, when Claudine was born, inheriting her father's blonde hair and willful lips, August's joy was essentially unparalleled. And in fact, as she grew older, it became clear that Claudine resembled her father quite closely in not only appearance, but also personality and behavior. And I guess I don't have to read beyond that. But like, just this idea of like blood inheritance and like the setting of trees made me be like, oh, like family tree, like tree of knowledge. Because like, it's also always emphasized that Claudine's really smart and like admired her father for also being smart. And they talk about like wanting to travel the world. Go to the Orient, see Japan at some point.
Yeah, I like the Orient part. It's like, oh, I have to type the word Orient.
Yeah, you're like, ouch. Here I go. Like,
<oof. laughs> yeah, that's actually a really interesting point.
And so, like, yeah, because the dad is also queer, it's like, are you saying that queerness is inherited? Like, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I had never thought about that. But yeah, like, with the, especially with that setting with the trees, there is, like, definitely a kind of emphasis on inheritance and, like, how Claudine is his father's son, so to speak.
And it comes back later. I mean, there's that shot of the tutor dude, like after Claudine has run away from Rosemary's party in the beginning.
Oh,
and
yeah,
he like chases Claudine. It's just like just a page of him like standing near a tree with a leaf falling. And then, of course, he burns down a forest basically to kill some people. So then there's a whole like sort of spread, or at least a page where it's like all the trees are burned. So I'm like, OK, I see what we have done here.
Oh yeah, that's really interesting. Like that, how the trees and the forest keep coming back and running through the story, especially with reference to like Claudine and his relationship with his father and his father's lovers, which would seem to like lend credence to that, your idea of like the inheritance of queerness.
Yeah, which inherently, like, so like at this one point I'm like, okay, having Claudine's dad be bi is like cool, and that's never like questioned. It's just like, yeah, that's a thing that happened. And on the other hand, I'm like, but both of them are queer, and that's like a thing that's supposed to connect them. I don't know about that one, but sure.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that at all, but that's really interesting. I wonder if that was the intent, to like frame it as like, well, of course Claudine is queer because dad is queer and Claudine takes after dad in every single way.
Yeah, I was like,
I would, but yeah, but then like Claudine isn't just bi, but like,
that's true.
I guess, I don't know, I'm trying to like wrap my head around what would be the point of introducing inheritance into that. Maybe just like, maybe Ikeda was trying to like be like, there's a reason.
Yeah, and also to like show the cyclic nature of the tragedy, you know, because like they both die.
Oh, that's true. And tragically.
Yeah, it's like an inescapable fate that will befall you.
Well, and I mean, that could be like another inheritance for, you know, Claudine from dad, is like, you're inescapably going to be have a tragic life.
Yeah.
But is that because of the queerness? Uh-oh.
Well, is it not?
Like... Well, in Claudine's case, definitely. In dad's case, I would argue that his tragedy comes about more because he's a player than because he's queer.
That's true. More unclear there, but...
Like, if he just didn't sleep around, he probably would still be alive. Which is a different cautionary tale.
Different cautionary tale here, yeah. don't be a player.
Don't be a player.
And then I guess the only, I mean, there are plenty of things to talk about. But the other thing that I had flagged as, you know, a thematic thing to discuss was, as we mentioned earlier, there is very strong manifestation of the, like, shoujo trope of being like, hey, but we can't do that because you're a girl. Or, like, you can't do that because you're a girl. Like, that's... So this isn't okay, which I feel was interesting to see here. I mean, it made sense here. I guess it always makes sense tragically because it's always like the patriarchy will come and smack you down and be like, hey.
That's kind of it. It's like, hey, patriarchy. I mean, this is a different but you're a girl kind of thing than like, well, maybe not actually. You see it in Yuri all the time too, right? Like, we can't date. We're both girls, like, but you're a girl. How could I smooch you? Which, like, no, it's cool. You can smooch.
It's cool. Nothing's going to happen. Like, it's fine.
But here it's definitely, I feel like it's more than just the usual, but you're a girl, you can't do that. The patriarchy will destroy you kind of thing. It's also like refuting Claudine's very identity. Because every time anyone says, but you're a girl, to Claudine, Claudine is in fact not a girl.
Right.
So it's a different level. Like in your standard shoujo, actually she is a girl. Like, so that, yeah. I mean, then it's just the patriarchy like crushing her dreams.
Yeah.
But here it's like, it's...
This is the denial, of Claudine's whole existence, basically.
Yeah, and so Claudine lives through this, like, and every time, especially when Cecilia says it, that... Isn't it? I'm pretty sure that's like Claudine like runs away, like all tragic shoujo style, with the words echoing in his head. You're a girl.
Yeah. And then like the last panel is him crying.
Yeah. And like, it's not just the, I mean, sure, he just was totally, she blew him off and he's so in love with her. But it's also like, you don't see me, like, you don't see that I'm not a girl. And every time anyone says that to him, it's just like soul crushing in a way that I think the standard you're a girl line is not. And also it inevitably like links to Claudine's tragic end, like a whole lifetime of being told you're something you're not. And then you realize you will never be seen as the thing that you truly are. Yeah. That's just going to like, what other options do I have? You know, like, you're just going to end up in that terrible, terrible dark place that Claudine ends up in.
Yeah, it's definitely, because Andrew also at some point is like, you're a woman, so you can't be together. Like, I forgive both you and...
That scene made me so mad.
Ooh.
He's such a smarmy ass in that. He's like, oh, like he's trying to be all magnanimous, like, oh, dear Claudine, I am your generous brother, Andrew. Yeah. I know about your love with Siren. She's told me everything, but I forgive you.
It will all be okay.
Yeah, like, I will make all of this right by making Siren a proper woman, marrying her. Like, he's the embodiment of the patriarchy, like, standing there, like, telling you, you're a girl.
That's the exact manifest. It's like, the patriarchy has come to save you. And Claudine's like, no, but the patriarchy actually literally just killed me. And I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, he totally is like, heteronormativity swoops in to save the day.
No!
And I mean, that's just like the final nail, basically. Like, that's the last straw for Claudine. Like, you know, having what was a mutual loving relationship between Siren and Claudine, and that's just completely denied. Like, not only is Claudine's identity as a man completely not recognized and pushed back by his own family, but then you have this beautiful love that has been sustaining Claudine and making Claudine feel like maybe I can go forward in this world after all. That love is completely like, just as Andrew makes as though it never happened. It wasn't even a thing. It's not real. You're a woman.
Yeah, that's true. He's definitely like, you know what? I forgive you. And now we're all going to just like pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I honestly think like, how could Claudine go on after that? Like, to have everything in your life taken from you, or you know, you can't ever be seen as who you are. The one thing that you found that gives you joy and makes you feel like Siren accepts Claudine as he is, like, and then that's taken away. The only person who has ever truly, I mean, you know, Rosemary aside, like, she's always had her own... I think that scene with Andrew is so crushing, and I think it directly like leads to Claudine's terrible end.
Yeah, so sad. Okay, I think we should inject some happiness here with my not love quiz. I don't know if you've listened to this podcast, but I tried to make like a love quiz segment. It hasn't super been working out for me.
Cool, I love this.
But this one is a gender quiz, which
all right.
I have done this. Okay, so on a different podcast, I do a Digimon podcast too. And the first time we did this, we have a transgender. My transgender friend is on that podcast. And when we started this, he was like, this quiz is BS. And then when we got to the end, he was like, this quiz is amazing. So like, everybody just trust me. Okay.
All right. We're all standing by, ready to trust.
Okay, so this is a free online gender quiz. That's just what it's called. And the subtitle is, have you ever wondered what your gender was? Fortunately, you've come to the right place. This free online gender quiz will tell you everything you need to know about your gender. Just answer all the questions as truthfully as you can, and all will be revealed. I suppose we shall try to answer them as Claudine.
As Claudine. Dang, okay.
Like, we can fight about Claudine's character.
I'm ready. Let's bring it.
Okay, so these are a series of statements, actually, that it's like the choices are strongly agree, disagree, neither agree, nor disagree, agree, strongly agree.
So like 1 to 5, with 5 being like, yes.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
So I frequently stand up for myself.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's like a 5.
5. Okay. Strongly agree. I am considerate of others' feelings. Not as much.
Yeah, you know, like maybe a 2.
We're going to disagree? All right.
I feel like that's, I don't know.
I would put neither agree nor disagree.
Maybe,
like,
yeah. Like, it's not like Claudine is callous.
Yeah.
He's just sort of focused on his own turmoil.
Like, once he realizes that he's hurt Mara and stuff, like, he's like, oh, I did a bad thing, you know?
That's true, actually, right. Okay, yeah. I would go with, like, neutral.
Right. I am a natural leader.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's, like, strongly agree.
Strongly agree, all right. I am known for my sense of humor.
No.
Definitely strongly disagree.
I mean, I don't know if you want to dispute that, but I don't think Claudine says a single funny thing.
I don't think there's a funny thing in this manga, except for the panel where the psychiatrist looks like a bug man.
Oh, and that is just so many laughs.
It really is. Like, that panel is truly precious. Oh, I consider myself brave.
Yeah, I would say, like, agree, maybe.
Yeah, like, Claudine's whole existence is a little bit brave here.
Yeah, but I like, definitely Claudine's existence is brave, but I don't know if Claudine would consider himself brave.
Yeah, I also don't know if he would, like, you know, go fight a person or something.
Like, yeah. I don't know. I would go with, like, agree or neither.
I'm going with agree. Agree is good.
Okay, we'll go with agree.
I can sometimes be aloof or withdrawn.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, a little bit.
You got that whole, like, everyone thinks I'm a girl, but I'm a guy thing going on. That would make you withdraw a little bit.
Yeah. He gets a little sad sometimes, definitely.
I'll go with, like, agree.
Yeah, agree's good.
Yeah.
I enjoy having a large circle of friends.
Well, he did join that men's club at university.
Yeah, he seems like he's always popular. Like,
yeah, he's like the life of the party. People are always like, oh, it's Claudine. Yeah, when he comes in a room.
Yeah, like the girls at Rosemary's party were all about him too. It's good.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, yeah, I would go with, like, strongly agree then.
Strongly agree.
Yeah. Okay.
I am confident in my own abilities.
Oh, yeah, I think that's definitely a yes. Like, agree or strongly agree? I don't know.
I think Claudine's a fairly confident person. I would go strongly agree.
I will totally back you up on that. Yeah.
Okay. I have a very logical mind.
No, I don't think so.
Strongly disagree.
Yeah, that's maybe a big no.
I am a very creative person.
I don't think we see Claudine doing anything creative.
No.
I mean, fashion-wise, there's some good stuff going on, but...
Yeah, no, I'm going to go neutral on that one.
Yeah, all right. I will accept a neutral there.
he gets some points for being fashionable, I guess.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's putting together those outfits and, like, I don't know, he probably did art projects at school or something.
Made some noodle necklaces.
Sure, you know, like we all do.
Yeah, I sometimes feel that I am experiencing emotions.
Oh, yeah.
Strongly.
I'm going to go with hard yes on that.
I sometimes judge myself too harshly.
I don't think so.
Like, the right amount of harsh, you think?
I don't know if Claudine really is, like, that judgmental of himself.
Mm.
I mean, he's upset a lot, but that's reasonable.
Yeah. Okay, I'll put disagree.
Yeah, I would go with, like, disagree.
Okay. I am generally an optimistic person.
No, I don't think so. Maybe, though. I mean, actually, no, I take that back, because Claudine keeps falling in love.
Yeah.
Which is an inherently optimistic thing to do.
I think he's very optimistic until he is soul-crushingly not.
That's not part of the strongly agree spectrum.
We could just go with agree. Like, yeah, I don't know. Okay,
yeah, let's go with agree to leave a little wiggle room for soul crush.
Yeah, for the end, we're going only with agree. I am frequently confused.
I would maybe be neutral on that. Is Claudine frequently confused?
I think Claudine knows what's up with himself. And
right?
Society thinks he's confused, but he's
oh,
not.
Oh, word. Let's maybe bring that down to disagree.
Disagree. That's right. Yeah. Okay. My body is made of meat.
I'm going to say agree. Yeah, I think Claudine is indeed a meat sack.
Okay. My body is made of metal.
Yeah, that's a no. That's a strongly disagree. Unless there's, like, a secret mech story underneath.
That would be amazing.
I would read a Claudine in which at the end, rather than die, Claudine, like, rips off Claudine's meat suit to reveal Mecha Claudine.
Mecha Claudine. That would be an amazing end.
Oh, I would totally read that.
My body is made of bits.
That's a tough one, because I don't know bits of what.
Yeah, bits of what? That's right.
And, like, are the bits glued together? Or, because technically, like, I would refer to bodies, they are an amalgamation of bits.
So we're gonna go with agree.
I would go with agree. Yeah, like because Claudine does have bits.
Yeah.
And pieces.
My body is incorporeal or diffuse.
Oh yeah, no.
Definitely Claudine not.
Claudine is not a gaseous blob, as far as I know.
Yeah, this one's easy. I have questioned my gender identity.
Oh yeah, okay. So maybe no.
No.
Well, Claudine's always known that he's a boy.
Okay. Disagree?
Isn't really a question. Yeah, I don't think he's questioned it.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's known from a very young age. So he's just like, I know what's up. Y'all are wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I always got that sense of he's like, talk to my hand.
Okay. Overall, my friends have more gender than I do.
It's hard to say because I don't know how to measure gender.
Yeah, right?
Neutral. But in terms of like number of, if we were to assume that one person is one, like has one amount of gender, then his friends would have more gender than he does just for the sheer fact of there being more of his friends than there are of him.
Okay. Strongly agree.
Just going to math that one out.
Yeah. Mathing that one out. I am all out of gender.
No.
He's like gender is a real thing, right?
Yeah. And he has some.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He's not all out of gender then. Yeah. Okay.
Disagree.
These are hard. These are really hard. I know.
We have maybe like 8 more or something. So sometimes I look at myself in the mirror and wonder where my life went so wrong. Yes.
Hey, totally. I mean, we all do that. Come on. Yeah, no. Claudine's definitely looking at
that. Definitely have done that. Okay. I have been made to feel unwelcome due to my perceived or actual gender.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Strongly agree.
I mean, his dad's lover's brother killed his dad.
Yeah, that's
I feel weird. Like that's related to Claudine's gender.
Yeah, it is. I'm telling you.
Like, that's pretty unwelcome.
Okay. I am an existential threat to organized human civilization due to my perceived or actual gender.
I don't think so. Yeah, I'm going to go with a hard no on that. No.
Yeah. Claudine is threatened by the society, by human civilization.
Yeah, it's like organized human civilization that is an actual existential threat to Claudine, not the other way around.
Exactly. My body is a prison that I will one day transcend.
Yeah.
Strongly agree.
I'm going to strongly agree because like that's how literally how the book ends.
Yeah, that's the end. I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
Well, yeah, no, because he watched a crazy man ride out of a... It's just a crazy, but he watched a crazed man who is clearly like in the throes of some kind of passion ride out of a forest on a horse laughing at the fact that he just murdered Claudine's dad.
Yep, that's some things you people would not believe.
Yeah, that's definitely agree.
Yes. The next statement is, this isn't even my final form.
Yeah, is he the last boss now?
Yeah. I think I want to strongly agree with that.
I think I will go with that. I'm okay with Claudine being some kind of last boss.
No, like Claudine is like, y'all told me I'm imperfect. I'm gonna come back as the boy. Like he's always like, I was a boy before. I'm gonna be a boy after.
Not I'm gonna be Mecha Claudine later.
I'm gonna be Mecha Claudine later.
Exactly. Yeah, okay, this isn't even my final form, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not trapped in here with you, you're trapped in here with me.
And that sounds very murdery.
Claudine's only a murderer of himself, ooh, dark, okay.
Yeah, I feel like disagree, because to be honest, hell is other people, and the other people are tormenting Claudine.
Yeah, Claudine is the one being tormented here.
Right, so it is Claudine trapped in there with whoever this terrible murderer person is. Yeah.
With the tutor.
Yeah. Oh, the tutor.
I am ageless and undying.
Yeah, I'm going to strongly disagree with that.
Strongly disagree.
Yeah, because we know the truth.
Yes. This is the last one. I am unstoppable. I simply cannot be stopped.
Yeah, see, unless Mecha Claudine happens, that's not true. Because, again, see the ending of the story.
Okay, I'm going to click the button that says, okay, what gender am I? Your gender is 3. Your gender is the natural number following 2 and preceding 4. It is prime. Whoa. There we go. We've solved it.
Wow, Claudine is 3.
Yeah.
You know, that makes so much sense. Like now, all of these things are like really coming together for me.
You really see it now, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. This is like, this podcast is telling us some truths.
I know. See, this quiz was great, right?
That is actually really great. And I also like the reference to it, like final form. That's maybe my new favorite thing.
This quiz is the thing that everybody needs in their life.
It's funny. I like how it starts out like, I'm a real like weird fake personality online quiz. It's going to tell you something pseudo meaningful about yourself and your life.
Yep.
And then it's like, nope. Are you a last boss?
Yep.
Your gender is 3.
And now we all know that gender is a social construct or just things that we made up. And it's fine. You can be whatever gender you want. You can be 3. That's good.
I like this. I like this like deconstructing of gender that we just performed.
I know. Okay, so I'm going to ask you about final thoughts, but we did get a last comment on Twitter that we will read in this final thoughts segment.
Okay, cool.
So it's from @Hoodley, and it is, what series, if any, do you think is comparable to this series and its themes? I take this as a, like, what recommendations do we have if you like Claudine?
Oh, wow, that's really hard. In English?
Yeah, I'm like, ooh, the struggle is in English, right?
Yeah, because like there's so much, I mean, a lot of the stuff from this time, like the shoujo and like shonen ai stuff, is definitely like on, especially anything from the Fabulous 49ers, basically, you'll get similar drama and also, I guess, consideration of like social constructs when it comes to women and their place in society. That's like a big thing that the 49ers take up a lot. But I don't know how much of their stuff has been translated into English. Like, I know Keiko Takemiya, she has Tatera, I think it's called in English, which deals with similar like identity stuff, but it's totally different. Like, it's like a sci-fi story, and this is weird, like, some people have like weird psychic abilities and stuff, and there's like a race war. And so, I mean, in that sense, it's not the same, but I would say if any kind of like shoujo from that era is going to have us, if you like Claudine, you'll probably really get into that stuff too.
Just the art would be similar too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They all play off each other art wise. They do a lot of deconstruction of like the paneling and stuff. That's when you start to see a lot of the, you know, the single figure standing on the side of the page with like roses flowing up behind them or something like that. You know, that kind of like art construction, and that's sort of the 49ers were really like pioneers in creating like paneling that is expressing the inner mental states of the characters. Yeah, and I know you can always like, I mean, if you want tragic queer stuff, there's lots
of. Yeah, I was like, that seems like there's a lot, unfortunately. I'm always very bad at thinking of things off the top of my head, but like, that's definitely just like a genre that exists.
Right. And I have like, yeah, it's hard because I don't know what's been translated into English. So it's hard to say this title. And someone better versed in that would be able to say, but I just, maybe just, if, yeah, I don't know. I'm coming up blank with an actual title.
Yeah, I mean, more modern things that are maybe less tragic that are good LGBTQ stories that have been translated. Okay, well, Wandering Sun got dropped. Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. That sucked, yeah. The series I mentioned before that I'm working on, Requiem of the Rose King, that's a trans character, maybe? It's hard to say.
When they never say specifically what they are, you're just like,
well, because this is like an adaptation of Shakespeare, of Richard III and Henry VI, I think. And so instead of like Richard being in the original Shakespeare, Richard is a hunchback or something. And then in Requiem, Kano, the author, she takes that and turns Richard into a intersex character. So he struggles with his gender identity in a similar way. Like, he's raised as a boy, but he has like lady bits, and he's like confused about stuff, but amidst like Shakespearean drama. So there's like murder and like,
good old murder. Yeah, there's lots of murder if you like murder.
I mean, that's like another interesting character where like the focus, like his inner mindset is always trying to deal with this like disconnect between how he presents and what his body is and how he thinks of himself. So that's, you know, and it's not tragic any more than any Shakespeare story is tragic.
I was like, whoa.
Richard's still alive and it's book 8. All right.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, I guess the only other one that I'm like, Sweet Blue Flowers, which is by the Wandering Sun author, is also, that one is finished. And there's definitely some, you know, questioning and like, ah, what am I sort of deal going on in there.
She's great for that. Any of her work, she really deals with like a lot of gender stuff, and not just what gender am I, but like this is the role being forced upon me because of the gender I am and stuff like that. So yeah Shimura Takako, she's great.
Yeah, and I don't perceive that to be like overly tragic, but it's certainly not like, you know, we could talk about super, super positive representations, which is like, I don't know, Steven Universe or like something on that level. Like, you know, it's not that level of happy either.
No, for good. Like, if you want like super positive queer representations, a lot of times you can find those in BL and UD, which sort of free themselves from the constraints of like the real world.
Yeah,
you know, so a lot of like, I mean, especially recently, like a lot of BL stuff is just like, everyone's gay.
Like, that's cool.
It's a thing. Like, I know this isn't translated into English, but one of my favorite BL is this Itoshino Nekoke, which is just these two guys who just really love each other and they're just really happy.
Great.
There's nothing like, it was released, I think J Manga released a volume of it, and then of course they disappeared, so unfortunately it's not legally available in English, but I hope that if I keep talking about it, someone will license
it. All right, we're just gonna like tweet it out that you said it on this podcast.
It's such a queer friendly book, like, and not in a gay for you kind of way. Like, it's sort of like, you know, the series by Rumiko Takahashi, Maison Ikkoku. It's like, you know, that like boarding house drama where like everyone's a silly character and the guy is in love with the landlady or the superintendent. Itoshi no Nekoke is like that, but queer. Like, it's just like a queer Maison Ikkoku. Nice. So you just have me and Kay and they just love each other. And then this house full of weirdos just gets in their way. But everyone's okay. Like, I want more stuff like that in English, because it's just like, everyone's queer. Great. Like, I want those happier stories to come over too.
Right. So we need everything. We need more of everything in English. We need more 70s shoujo.
Yes.
That may or may not be tragic. And we need more happy things.
Exactly. Yeah, I think we should just keep asking for it.
I think we should just get all the things. I don't know why the publishers can't sustain this.
I don't know, man. I'm always telling them. I'm always like, you guys, bring all the things, they say.
And they're like, maybe.
Well, think about it and get back to you, Jocelyn. Yeah. And then they never get back to me.
Oh, rude. Were there any other final thoughts about Claudine that you didn't get to mention before I read this outro?
I think we like really got into it. Basically, I think like Claudine is just such a great book, and I'm glad that it came out, even if it is tragic, because it's like you said before, it's so like giving us this look back at like shoujo roots. It's also giving us a look back at like LGBTQ awareness and where we were and where we are now, which is really interesting. And then it's a great story with like a beautiful character and beautiful relationships. So
good fashion.
And super good fashion. Those shoes.
I liked Claudine's vest. It was good. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And doesn't Sikhen have a what are those called? A muff?
A muff. Like I'm not good on fashion.
You know the little tube that you put your hands in?
Oh.
What are those called? Anyways, that's so fashion. Like, that's so old school fashion. Like, I can't wear gloves.
Oh, yeah. Okay. She might.
I feel like she does. Anyways, good fashion all around.
Yes. Again, everybody buy Claudine so that we can tell the publishers know that we want the 70s shoujo.
Yes. Go vote with your dollars, my friends. If you don't have dollars, go to the library and hassle them.
Yes.
Because they'll order it in for you, most libraries, if they know that people want it. And then you can get it and read it. And then other people can come after you and read it. And you're spreading the love.
Spreading the love. And if you somehow can't do either of those things, most publishers do have a little, like, survey form that are like, what do you want from us? And you can go, like, fill out all their forms.
Yeah. Fill out all their forms. Just don't hassle them on Twitter because that's mean.
Yeah. Fill out their official forms. That's what I've been learning. I learned semi the hard way to do that.
Yeah. They won't talk to you about stuff on Twitter, but they will look at your comments on their official forms. So fill them out and tell publishers, I want more classic shoujo and also happy queers.
Yes. Done. Thanks for listening to Shoujo and Tell. Comments, questions, constructive criticism, concerns, email shoujoandtell@gmail.com or leave a comment on shoujoandtell.com/Claudine. We're at shoujoandtell on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. I don't know. Just look it up on the Googles. So where can people find you and your work on the internet?
People can find me at, I do a blog about reading. It's basically me just noodling about books. It's called Brain Versus Book, and that's brainversusbook.com. I'm also on that handle on Twitter, so I'm at Brain Versus Book. And if you want to like look up all the books that I've ever translated, I have a list of publications on my work website, which is kaikatsu.ca. So lots of places. I'm not on the Tumblrs or the Facebooks or the Instagrams because I just don't want to.
That makes sense. Social media is overwhelming.
I have Twitter. Come find me on Twitter. That's where I hang out.
Yes. And as mentioned before, you have been / will be on the Manga Machinations podcast to discuss my lesbian experience with loneliness and my solo exchange diaries. So if people want to hear about those, go listen to those episodes.
You can totally come hear me talk about other depressing queers.
That's true. That is sadly true.
Yeah, but she's working on it. She's gonna get
it's
there.
It's not as sad.
No. It's actually it's more hopeful than that.
Yeah. Are you excited every time you see a new episode from us? If so, please consider leaving a rating in iTunes or Stitcher. This will help the podcast reach more hearts, or at least ears. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next time for Magic Knight Ray Earth by Clamp. For real this time, I am not... I've said this at least twice on this podcast that we were going to do Magic Knight Ray Earth, and then we didn't. But for real, I've already recorded that episode. It's going to come out. Why don't you trust me? I don't understand. I swear.
It's because you keep lying to them.
I know. But this time, third time's a charm. It's real. We're going to do it.
Fingers crossed.
Until then, bye.
Bye.